The residential care facility fades from my rearview mirror. My 24-year-old son, sitting in the passenger seat, turns to me. With a straight face, he says, "If I would have known hitting someone would free me, Pamela, I would have manned up and hit someone long ago. I knew I was being a pussy." And then the laughter rolls. Just like that, the uninvited guests show up for the ride. There isn't enough room for all of us in this two-door Jeep. The air feels thick. Micah's hysterical cackling doesn't make sense to me. I try to pretend that I don't hear it, that it doesn't scare me. I'm a warrior mommy, after all. But my knees are bruised from praying. Heal me, heal him, heal my guilt. That place is nuts. The animals talking through the TV was too much, he says. With disgust, Micah tells me how he could feel his roommate's breath on his body, on his genitals, from across the room. That dude had it coming. I had to hit him, he says. I couldn't take one more night in that place. More stories follow. I'm not sure where one ends and another begins, what's true and what's a delusion. Since Micah is legally an adult, I had to get a court order to have him involuntarily committed for treatment in the first place. He'd get a little better, then he'd relapse. This time around, Micah had been acting odd for more than 8 months. His doctors tried to adjust his medication and gave him lithium. It reacted badly with the other drugs in his system, and he was hospitalized. After returning to the residential treatment, his delusions got worse, but only I noticed. I couldn't convince the doctor that's what was going on. I was told to accept Micah the way he is. Next thing I know, I'm picking him up after he'd been refusing medication for more than 5 weeks, put in jail for attacking his roommate, and dismissed from the facility. Once again, I had to petition the court to order him to the hospital, then wait and see if the doctor would hold him there until he could be reevaluated and placed in another facility. In the meantime, he had nowhere to go but home with me. I had hoped that this temporary arrangement would provide a little peace, but no one's sleeping tonight. Micah won't stop pacing around the house, talking to the uninvited guests all day and all night. The conversations continue. Micah argues with himself. He thinks he's talking to God and Satan. He thinks he's a famous rapper and that I've stolen $83 million from him, and that's why I'm keeping him in the facility. He's angry at me and my husband, Rudy. We're afraid to go to bed. About 6 years ago, before we knew the name of this disease, I kicked Micah out of the house. He'd been stealing from us and pawning TVs, computers, cameras, video recorders, anything of value. We thought he was using the money for drugs. He'd be gone for days at a time, and then he'd suddenly show up. Once he kicked in the front door just to get in the house. Another time he broke out a window. He would try to take over the whole house. He weighed 350 pounds. He was strong, reckless, unpredictable, and he scared us. Rudy couldn't take it anymore, and I could feel him pulling away. I took a tough love approach with my teenage son. I told him to get out, and he went to live on the streets. But I remained his mother, and I always wondered what he was doing and where he was staying. And I'd often see him outside the library. I started dropping off backpacks filled with bottled water, dry socks, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And one day at work, I got a text message from him claiming that he was being held hostage and forced to break into houses. Hours later, I found him cold, coughing, and beat up in a park porta potty at 3 a.m. There were more sleepless nights that year. Something wasn't right. I feared it would come down to me losing my husband for saving my son. In one last-ditch effort, I got Micah a job and rented him a room in Dakota City. But instead of going home after work, he slept in the locker room on the concrete floors. Shortly after that, he started taking taxis around town, but he couldn't pay. They put him in jail. No matter what we did to help, he always ended up losing all of his clothes and possessions. I knew he wasn't well. Micah wasn't a manipulative, spoiled child tripping on drugs. He was developing paranoid schizophrenia, but he was good at hiding it. He didn't want to believe he was mentally ill. Couldn't, actually. Lack of insight affects about half of the people living with schizophrenia, and it's one of the biggest reasons why people who have it do not take their medication. They're not in denial of the disease. They're incapable of seeing it. That's Micah. As his mother, I could drown in a sea of hopelessness trying to save him. But above all else, I choose love for Micah and myself. Of course, it's not easy living between sacrifice and self-care. Last year, when I was forced to take my grown son home from the residential care facility, our lives descended into chaos again. The pacing wouldn't stop. The laughter, the uninvited guest. I was paralyzed with fear when Micah excitedly asked, "How would you spend your last moments if God said you only had 30 minutes left to live, Pamela?" He started calling me Pamela again. Not Mom, Pamela, with every syllable exaggerated. After 48 hours with no sleep, I barricaded my bedroom door with a chair and several plastic tubs full of clothes and stuff we didn't use. But he shoved the door open anyway, just far enough to see me jolt from my bed. And just like that, he didn't trust me again. No matter what I do, his paranoid schizophrenia won't go away, and neither will its challenges. This is a situation that calls for honey, slow and sweet, while navigating in the sticky. I try to move through it all like honey. Today, Micah lives in another group home and works for a commercial cleaning company. And as nice as it is, he never changes. Several times he's left and been unaccounted for, risking being moved to a lesser facility that will not offer the comfort that this place does. This is my worry, not his. Like I said, Micah has no insight or awareness. Schizophrenia stole that from him. He's always trying to run from the disease that he can't comprehend. He's looking for a normal life. He knows enough to realize that how he lives is different, and he doesn't want to be associated with that, the stigma of it. But he can't make sound decisions. The paranoia never lets him rest, never allows him to think anything through. On Mother's Day, Rudy and I plan to go out for dinner with Micah, a special meal with just the three of us. But by Sunday afternoon, I received a text message from him. Micah didn't want dinner. He just wanted me to send money for cigarettes. So that's what I did, because I choose love. Because I choose acceptance, just the way he is.
Cam Muniz is a senior sales specialist at Tyson Fresh Meats and yoga instructor at B Yoga Studio and Underground Yoga. She shared her story at Ode's Live Storytelling event last month. Join us on Wednesdays to hear more. Next week,
panic set in with each measuring cup and Tupperware container I received. What sent me over the edge was the shiny red 22-pound KitchenAid artisan stand mixer.
Ode is a storytelling series where community members tell true stories on stage to promote positive impact through empathy. It is produced by Siouxland Public Media. Our next event is 7 p.m. Friday, August 4 at B Yoga Studio in downtown Sioux City. The theme is Little Did I Know. Tickets are available at kwit.org. You can also listen to past stories online and learn more about Ode on Facebook. This story was produced with the support of the Images and Voices of Hope Restorative Narrative Fellowship. The music you're hearing was played live by Jesus Iniguez at the event. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Allie Carson. Well,
life tasted sweet when